trajectory. The endeavor plays out the way most weddings do, as a messy process with unexpected challenges that test the bounds of teamwork. But, in the end, there's a certain sense of relief. Joan and Arthur are both in their early 40s, and as with most gay men of their generation, their gay identities formed first as a matter of revelation and survival, next as a matter of pleasure and defiance, and finally as a matter of community and pride. When they were 16 years old, 10 years away from meeting each other, getting legally married wasn't something they could imagine. If they had, it would have felt like a Technicolor dream sequence. Their love formed when marriage was still out of bounds, and when the bounds changed with astonishing speed, it took them a while to decide the step finally being offered was a step worth taking. The only way they could do it was in their own fashion. Some couples have a favorite song. Jen and Arthur have a favorite state of being, and that is song. Neither of them sings particularly well or plays an instrument with any proficiency. Instead, they believe in the ever-present soundtrack, the perpetual playlist. Sometimes they control the dials, manipulating their sonic surroundings to enhance or alter their moods. Other times they leave it to chance, not just by shuffling toward randomness, but often by wandering around Göteborg and waiting for a song to come to them, lilting from an open window or roaring out of a bar. The life they share and the songs they share are inseparable. So when they planned their wedding, they knew they wanted, one, a theme-songed wedding, two, a song-themed wedding. The second of these desires leads to the first explanation of their costume. Just as each of their guests has come dressed as a favorite song, Jun and Arthur are dressed as a tune that fits the occasion far better than a large tuxedo fits two men of different heights. The Spice Girls' mathematically simplistic yet philosophically rich ballad, Two Become One. As for the desire to have a theme-songed wedding, well, that is where Jay, the man waiting patiently behind them, comes in. Jay is a somewhat successful Swedish singer-songwriter. If you live outside of Sweden, it's unlikely you've heard any of his songs on the radio, unless you are one of the bookish, folkish sort who listen to bookish, folkish stations that play bookish, folkish ditties. Then you might know exactly who Jay is. The reason he's here tonight is not a long-standing friendship with John and Arthur. Until they emailed him out of the blue, Jay had never met them. This may seem like a strange thing to do, but for Jay it is not that strange, because on his debut album there is a song called If You Ever Need a Stranger to Sing at Your Wedding. It goes like this. If you ever need a stranger to sing at your wedding, a last-minute choice, then I am your man. I know every song, you name it, by Bacharach or David, every stupid love song that's ever touched your heart, every power ballad that's ever climbed the charts. You think it's funny, my obsession with the holy matrimony. But I'm just so amazed to witness true love, and true love can be measured through these simple pleasures. They're waiting there for you to be discovered. I would cut off my right arm to be someone's lover. Maybe I'll meet her there tonight at the wedding buffet. I'll walk up to her when she's caught the bouquet.
Songs are not, by nature, self-fulfilling prophecies. It's safe to say that Bing Crosby experienced many snowless Christmases, Michael Jackson notably did not heal the world, and Florence Welch had no idea what 2020 was going to be like when she proclaimed the dog days to be over in 2010. Over the years, many devotees of Jay's music have gotten in touch with him when their weddings are in the larval stage, asking if he's available to put some musical colors onto the ceremony's wings. Wedding singer gigs are usually more lucrative.